I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, this is Desi Relaford, former major leaguer, current coach with the Cincinnati Reds, and you're listening to The Jake Brown Show.
And welcome to The Jake Brown Show, the final month of our program with CBS. Radio.com, iTunes, and Spotify is where you find us. Everyone knows I am a diehard Mets fan, and this guy was one of my favorite Mets on the 2001 team, and it sucks that they didn't bring him back. That was a good season, a season that I'll always remember. Obviously, you remember the home run Piazza after 9/11, but you remember the John Franco giving up the home run of Brian Jordan in Atlanta. That broke my heart. I was at a Sears watching that game on the TVs at a Sears in the TV section, literally like crying in September. I was 10 years old. Joining us now is a man that played essentially every position except for catcher, Desi Relaford, and he's a coach in the Cincinnati Reds organization for the High A Daytona Tortugas. Am I saying that right, Desi?
That is correct. Tortugas. For you guys that are Spanish challenged, that means turtle in Spanish.
It sounded like something on the Taco Bell menu at first. It just got me hungry. I will not be ordering tortugas with my dollar nacho fries. And you made the shift now to coaching, and you're working with the guy who's managing the Tortugas is former Met, one-time Met, Ricky Gutierrez.
Yes,
how is that experience with the Reds, who obviously are a young team with a lot of prospects?
So far it's been fun. Just to be back in the clubhouse and seeing old faces. Baseball is a very small fraternity, so it's like I know pretty much everybody, all of the coaches, and the Reds and their philosophy right now. They're kind of going back to old school. They're implementing, they're getting back into coaching, where they're, a lot of the coaches that I've seen are former major league guys that have a pretty good amount of time that they spend in the big leagues and a wealth of knowledge. And they're relying on these people that they've, interviewed and vetted to have an impact on their minor leaguers coming up. So I like the ability to kind of be myself, give my knowledge, and hopefully help a lot of kids make their way towards the big leagues.
Yeah,
so far it seems like it's a good place to be.
Yeah, and it seems like some interest. It looks like Darryl Ward is one of the coaches in the Low A Daytona, mm-hmm. And there's some other names in there as well.
Without a doubt.
So the Reds are young and they're in the middle of a rebuild. There's going to be a lot of L's probably compiled this year. It seems like for a minor league coach, that's good for you guys because you can help get these guys to the big leagues and try and right the ship. What is that feeling like working for a team? Because we got to be real. They're not going to be a playoff team. Maybe they shock the world, but they're
right.
You guys are a rebuilding team. What's the feel of that as a coach in that organization?
There's always been a divide between, major league and big league. So we, as a minor league coach, we're aware of what's going on over there. Just like major leaguers, they're not really concerned about what's going on in the minor leagues.
Mm-hmm.
But it really has no bearing on what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Our job is to go out and to help mold and create major leaguers. And regardless of what's going on in the big leagues, whether it's, a playoff team or the Reds, our job doesn't change. So, we're just doing what we need to do.
Desi Relaford joining us on the Jake Brown Show. You're not on Twitter, Desi. What's going on? Are you going to make a Twitter?
You know what? I actually am on Twitter, but I never tweet. I guess I need to...
You got to get on Twitter.
Yeah, I got to start doing it because I'm on Instagram a little more. Like, if there's one social social media that I do utilize, it's Instagram. So I'm on there a little bit. But yeah, I need to tweet. Like, I still don't kind of get it. I guess you just kind of say what's on your mind and comment and
yeah, and you interact with the fan. I mean, you search your name and people will tweet about you. So I think they would enjoy if you have a Twitter. I just gave you a follow on the gram, Delarel on the gram. So you do post there, which is good. But I mean, Twitter, it's also Desi a great. I mean, Instagram's great too if you're single. I'll say just sliding in DMs. You're not going to do that on Twitter, but you can do it on Instagram. But in terms of Twitter, you get a lot of news on there too. Whatever's trending, you get all your news. Like, you don't even have to watch the depressing like CNN and watch everything about Trump. You could just look what's trending.
Yeah, I don't watch the news anyway. I try not to bombard my brain with. You know, trash and psychological warfare and whatnot.
Yeah, there's too. That's why I go to Twitter, man. I could read about it in 200 characters or less, and I'll be set. But you should definitely tweet. I mean, you don't have to. If you're on the gram, that's good. But
no, but I think so because you know there's a couple things that I'm gonna start doing as far as doing some writing and some other stuff. So I think it's just good to be out there and let people know. I'm alive.
Yeah, and I think it's important for you because you played, I mean, in Philly, in San Diego, in New York, in Seattle, in Kansas City, in Colorado, Texas. I mean, you were all over. So I think you do have some fans, I mean, across the country from different fan bases who would like to hear your perspective on baseball and hear about what's going on in the season. So just a recommendation. But Desi Rell for joining us. Now, how about the night, I'll always remember that when I just realized I found that you actually never played first base, which is weird because you played all these positions and you think you would play first because first is like
I did in a minor league, but never in a major league game.
You would think they put you everywhere and you didn't play first base, which is odd. Catcher, understandable. But the one night that you came in, I think it was against the Padres, if I'm not mistaken, and you came in and pitched a scoreless inning, had a strikeout, through 90 miles an hour. Take me through that night, how it played out, and what happened.
Well, I hadn't even thought about that in a while. It's funny. It's actually like my big league highlight, like the highlight of my big league career. Because I, growing up, I always pitched. I pitched my whole life up until I got drafted. So I consider myself a pitcher. And I actually talked a lot of trash coming up in the minor leagues. Telling pitchers that, I thought I was better than them and that I could do this and that and that if they just gave me the shot, I could do it. I talk to pitchers and tell them it's not as hard as you're making it. Yeah, just being a jerk about it, I guess, at some point. But I felt like I could do it. And we were getting blasted that night and our bullpen was scuffling a little bit. Like, there were some guys that were hurt and just kind of overused. And Bobby didn't want to use anybody. He didn't want to use any more arms. So he came down the dugout, and he asked me, he was like, when's the last time you pitched? And I said, well, it was 10 years ago, but I work on my stuff every day. because I did. Like, I was playing catch. I had developed a changeup over the years. And then he just kind of brushed me off, and he went to Todd Zeal. He asked Todd if he wanted to. He's like, can you pitch? And Todd was like, oh, yeah, I could get out there and throw some knuckleballs and whatever. And I was, I'm just hating on Todd. I was like, Bobby, don't let this guy pitch. Like, you can't let him pitch. Like, I can pitch. So Bobby's like, hey, we don't need anybody getting hurt, blah, whatever. I was like, I know how to throw a ball. I'm not going to hurt myself. So he sent me to the bullpen. And I go to the bullpen, and it was literally like that. I was so excited and like just so anxious and so like I was giddy, like a little kid. Now I was finally living my dream. Like, yeah, I've been in the big leagues for, 3 or 4 years at this point, but now I'm like really living my dream. Like, I'm pitching in the big leagues. So I got in the game and it was, I felt like, it was serious, like game on, like I was tunnel vision, like it was me and the catcher, and I was focused. Like, I really felt like I was supposed to go out there and pitch well and, like, get guys out just like I did in American Legion in high school. That's what I felt like. And, I had a really good time. Like, I was throwing balls to both sides of the plate, changing speeds, had a good changeup. Like you said, I struck a guy out. had a couple swings and misses, and hit like 91, 92 on the gun. It was a blast. Like, it was the funnest night I had on a baseball field. And then afterwards, like, some of the guys were like really wild. Mm-hmm. Like, they were like Al Leiter and like Rick Reed, and some of the other guys came over to me and was like super impressed and were like, dude, you need to start like throwing, like get your arm in shape. Like, we could use you like as a, you know, a 13th mm-hmm. guy out of the bullpen. You know, I kind of laughed it off or whatever, but dude, like a few days later, I was throwing bullpens. They had me throwing bullpens, and I started, I actually got up, I think, two more times that year. Once for sure, I remember I was in Philly, and I was, oh my gosh, I was pissed that freaking Turk Wendell got out of it. They made the call. I'm going in. Like, if he doesn't get the next guy out, I'm pitching in Philly, my old team. And this jerk gets a double play ball and gets out of the inning.
God damn it, Turk Wendell.
Yeah.
Should have cut your hair, man.
Doing, helping us win. You know, like, yeah, but yeah, so, yeah, it actually kind of turned into a little something for a second, but that was it.
Well, I always remember that moment, and thanks to the, you got to love the internet, I found the story from that game night, New York Times, May 18th, 2001. So the final score was 15-3. Steve Traxel pitching got pounded. He pitched terrible.
It was May 8th?
It says May 18th is the story.
Oh, 18th. Okay.
So there's the date for you. See, you probably didn't remember that. I would have never remembered the date.
No, definitely.
I think it was earlier in the year, but yeah, May 18th. So, well, first off, Steve Traxel. I mean, I guess you didn't start that game, but playing behind him. I mean, I remember one of those years, I think 2003, I had a Saturday plan, and I would always get a Steve Traxel start, and you could never expect to have a dinner reservation anytime before 7 o'clock if it was a 1 o'clock game, because he was going to take hours and hours and hours. Was that frustrating?
You think it's bad as a fan.
Yeah.
Like, dude, it's the worst. I played short that night.
You did play. Okay.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. I pitched that night, and I went, like, 2-for-4. Like, it was a couple mm-hmm. off your eyes or something. Like, it was a good night for me, and it sucked for the team. But, playing behind Steve, I mean, he'd take, you know, 40 seconds, 30, 45 to a minute between each pitch. And, I mean, it was just, I mean, you know, guys would literally be yelling at him, like, let's go. Like, you know, you can't, you know, say the stuff we say, but, like, no, it's super frustrating because it gets you out of rhythm, and he's just, yeah. And he's not the only guy, but he's one of the more well-known ones, and deservedly so.
Well, Desi, if you played today, the pace of play rule would be called the pace of Traxel rule or something. The Traxel of play. I mean, that's what it would be called.
Without a doubt. He was so extra with it. Like, the time he took in between pitches was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he would always scrape his feet and use all different kind of stuff. I don't even know what he did. But he would pass that 10-second limit or whatever it is, and for sure probably go past the 6 mound visits per game that they have now. It was a disaster watching. But I didn't realize you played. But how did you still have a bullpen session but play shortstop? How did that even work out?
No, because he came in. I came in between innings. You know, we were in the dugout, and I wasn't up to bat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So, okay, that makes sense. So the bottom of the inning, you ran out there quick and then said, all right, I'm coming.
Right, and got loose. Because I remember how pissed Ordonez was that he had to come in and play the last inning.
In a 15-3 game, he's like, come on, Bobby.
Yeah, he was pissed. Yeah.
Did you like Bobby V? I feel like the fans loved him. Did the players love him?
I loved Bobby V. Mm-hmm. I loved Bobby V. It wasn't that case for everyone, but I think most guys liked him, and I really liked him. Like, I saw Bobby last year, I think, in New York at a dinner, the MLB, the alumni dinner, and I hadn't seen him since 2001. And he came up, gave me a big hug, you know, gave me the Italian kiss on the cheek. And, like, the first thing he said was, we shouldn't have traded you. And I was like, man, I thought I was the only one that felt that way. And it was cool that, you know, you got to get validated. But it was, I like Bobby. Really like Bobby.
traded in January 25th, 2002. Well, no, you were traded December with Shinjo. By the way, I mean, you and Shinjo were two of like my more obscure favorite players. I love Shinjo. Right. I remember the game where he slid into first base and I think hurt himself, and then Piazza hit a two-run homer against Mariano after that. I don't remember what year that was, but I didn't realize
that
you were traded with – that was
0-1. I think it was 0-1.
Okay. Yeah. You were traded with Shinjo for Sean Estes, the world-famous Sean Estes, who
Sean
threw
Estes
behind Roger Clemens.
Yep. Oh, Sean. That's funny because me and Sean actually were drafted the same year and played rookie ball together in with Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then 2002, the Mets were not good. That 2001 season, I know you played everywhere else, but I'm focusing on Mets right now because that's my team.
Sure.
That season was a whirlwind towards the end. Obviously, you guys are in the playoff race here. 9/11 happens. I mean, take me through that moment, the Piazza game, the Piazza homer, and the feel in that ballpark, and what's going through your mind.
Like, well, first of all, you know, like everybody else, there's just a lot of emotion in everyone in the park. You know, you could feel it, and there was a somberness, but there was also an excitement, and you know, people were just kind of happy to be back out, you know, a little bit, and for the first time. I mean, and it was I don't know, like it was different. It was like, it was like opening day times 10. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was like, to have, you know, for us to be the home team and have Mike come through, you know what I'm saying, with that big hit, I mean, I think everybody, I mean, even talking to some players afterwards, guys on the other team, they were even, like, they weren't even mad. They were almost kind of pulling for us to win the game that night, not that they were trying to throw it. But, like, when he hit it, they were, you know, it just couldn't be mad. You know, it was like it was bigger than, you know, Mets and Braves. It was, you know, this America thing. So, and just, yeah, man, I remember seeing all kind of superstars there, and everybody was emotional. You know, before the game, there was, you know, tears, and people were just really moved by the situation. So I think just poetically him hitting a home run was what was supposed to happen.
Yeah, and it was in the midst of a playoff race, kind of. You guys were still in it, and as I said before, the Brian Jordan homer against John Franco while Jake Brown was at a Sears, I think. I don't even know what we were doing at Sears. My parents probably needed a washing machine or something. But I remember my heart. That was kind of the game where it was like, all right, the season, there, it's over. I think they might have been eliminated. I was 10, so at that time, I was believing until mathematical elimination happened. So that was a good season for you guys, but just fell short. Do you consider yourself a Philly? Like, you played the most time with the Phillies. Is that who you affiliate yourself the most with?
No, I don't, because that was the organization I liked the least, or had the least amount of fun or whatever. And I can't say the organization. The organization was good. There was just a coach that I dealt with there for a while that made my time there terrible.
Who was that?
John Vukovic. He passed away a few years ago.
Hmm.
But yeah, it was, it wasn't, I didn't have a whole lot of fun there. So I don't claim Philly like that.
But why though? Besides the coach, like, why wasn't it fun there?
No, he made it not fun.
It was just him? What did he do?
It was him. And then the kind of the coaches, like, oh, just dumb shit. Like, sorry.
No, you can curse. You're good.
Yeah, like, you know, just always treated me ultra rookie-like, and I couldn't even be myself. Like, say if I was in the clubhouse and I was, you know, having a good time and, you know, talking and being like myself. You know, I'm not shy. Like, I have a good time and, you know, I don't know. I'm not loud, but I'm talkative, and you know, like I said, I move around, talk to different people, whatever. But you know, if I was being myself and doing that, then I was a rookie. I didn't know my place. You know, And if I was in my locker with my headphones on, you know, listening to music by myself, then, you know, I wasn't a team type guy. Or if I was taking ground balls and, you know, say I took 100 ground balls and the last ball I made, you know, make a bad throw or whatever, he'd like literally yell at me and, you know, tell me I wasn't that good. Or if I went 3 for 4, like, he would harp on why I didn't get the fourth hit. Like, dumb stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was always something. And and one time, like, he really embarrassed me. He tried to embarrass me. He didn't try to. He did. We were playing. We had a getaway game against the Braves or somebody at home. Day game. It was really bright. I had a fly ball pop up in the infield, and I lost it in the sun. That happens in baseball, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you've seen that happen before.
Of course, yeah.
That's the first time and only time ever it happened in my life that I missed a ball because I lost it in the sun or whatever, but it happened. So, you know, I get the third degree for that, but not only did he yell at me like a kid, but we get to the park the next day in Milwaukee, and he has me out early, hitting me pop-ups and making me wear these slip shades and learning how to use slip shades. I didn't even wear shades, but that was his way to try to just, I don't know, embarrass me / I don't know what he thought he was getting out of it. But, you know, I felt embarrassed, and a lot of other people just like, yo, what's going on? Like, everybody saw what was going on. And it was constant. It was that kind of stuff for like 3 years. So it wasn't fun. You know what I'm saying? It just wasn't fun. It was hard to go to the park every day and perform.
Yeah, and Philly gets a bad rap sometimes, and that's interesting. I would have never guessed that, but, I mean, it seems like –
and the fans were – oh, they were trash too. I know I have some really good friends there, but they're just – yeah, they're – as fans? Oh, yeah, the worst.
What happened that made you say that?
I mean, it wasn't just me.
Yeah.
It's just well known that they're not only are they hard, but they're just irrational. Like, they just boo just to boo. You know what I'm saying? Like, I saw him boo Billy Wagner one night because he didn't throw 100. Like, he threw 100, like, a few pitches in a row. They're all excited. He threw 98, and they booed the shit out of him. I'm just like, or Scott Rowland hitting 2 home runs in a game and coming up the last at bat and not getting a hit and getting booed out of the stadium. Or, you know, me getting booed before they even announced my name. You know what I'm saying? Like, now batting, you're a shortstop.
Really?
You know, and it's just like, yeah, I mean, I get it. I was scuffling. Like, I understand there's a time. I'm not saying you can't get booed or fans shouldn't boo. Like, I think if a player should, if he deserves to get booed, yeah, boo his ass. Like, give it to him. But there's a time and place, and it shouldn't just be for any and everything. And especially your home team.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I can understand getting booed by your home team, but things should be really, really bad before that happens.
Yeah, well, if you're having a bad year, like, it happens. Like, I understand
year,
that.
Yeah,
but a guy not throwing 100 miles an hour getting booed, like, come on. That's BS. Like, come on. Give me a break.
And it was part that, part mostly, like, the fan thing, you can kind of tune that out. It's whatever. Mm-hmm. But when you have to deal with someone on a personal basis day in and day out. And I was young. Like, I got big leagues when I was 21. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, I'm just trying to fit in and, you know, I just want to do my job, man. And, like, instead of them making it easy, it was hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, you leave Philly, Desi, and, I mean, when you go to San Diego, and we're not great there, but you come to New York. I didn't realize how good of a season you did have with the Mets. 302 average, 364 OBP. When you look at the numbers, it's wild that they did trade you, considering Sean Estes wasn't like a Cy Young winner coming to town.
Right.
And Shinjo was, I would assume, like, he must have been a cool locker room guy. Like, he must have been fun to play with as well.
Well, yeah, Shinjo was awesome. I mean, he didn't speak a whole lot of English, but
he played hard, you know, though.
He was awesome. Just, he was fun to watch, and just, you know, he's a good teammate. And, you know, he played hard. I had fun. That was, I mean, 2001, really good year overall for me.
Playing
different positions, good average. But, and to go back, it was really the first time that I felt like I, because Bobby, he let me play. Like, he was like, dude, like, I don't know what's been going on wherever you were, but he was like, you know, like, you can play. Like, just go play. Like, he just allowed me to just go do me. Like, I didn't get, you know, chewed out for missing a ground ball during taking fungos or, you know, get yelled at how I was wearing my pants. Like, I was allowed to just go play baseball and be a professional.
Yeah, I mean, that was your best year average, and OBP-wise, it seemed like you were most comfortable. Yeah,
I was comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, people were like, how could you play, you know, how's it playing in New York? I was like, that doesn't matter. Like, if you play the game like you're supposed to play, like, you know, it's not tough. You just play, you know, play good ball. And, you know, even if you don't play good ball, you know, you play hard. And, you know, if they ask you what happened, hey, tell them I fucked up. I didn't have a good day or a good season. What can they tell you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Desi Rella for joining the Jake Brown Show for a couple more minutes. Were you happy? I mean, I'd imagine you were not, but you were 34 when you retired. I mean, how hard was it to stop playing?
Yeah, that was tough. You know, and I think everyone always feels, not always, but more times than not, most guys feel like it was taken away a little too soon and feel like they got a little more in the tank. I think that holds true for a lot of guys. I think I could have played a little bit more, but, you know, it happened how it happened. But coming to grips with the end of a career is tough, I think, for anybody. I actually wrote an article about it. You can find it online. It's the title of it is called Why So Soon. I wrote an article basically kind of detailing and what it is to come to grips with the, you know, with a career, you know, with something you love, and you're not allowed to play it anymore, or whatever it is. You're just, someone tells you, hey, you can't do that anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Do something else.
And I mean, you played almost a dozen years, which is impressive, because not all guys last that long in the big leagues. But when it ends, like in your 30s, and some guys get to their 40s, I'm sure it's tough, and I do see the article actually you're talking about. So it's interesting because you were a guy that was a super utility guy. When I think of utility guys ever in baseball, I think of you and Joe McEwing. Was he on that team in 2001?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
That was my man. And we both of us had good years that year. We, you know, we were fortunate that, you know, just kind of how it works out in baseball that, you know, Edgardo, you know, Alfonso, he was having back issues that year, so he missed a lot of time. He was on DL and was sore, so that got us some playing time, got me some playing time, and the same thing with Ventura over at third. He was battling some injuries, so that got me some PT, and then Ordóñez was scuffling, you know, offensively, so that got me some PT. So I was, you know, I was fortunate just kind of be in the right place, right spot, and take advantage of the time when I got it, the opportunity.
And Joe McEwing was the king against Randy Johnson. I mean, nobody hit better against, like, an obscure player that hits well against a Hall of Fame pitcher. That was Joe McEwing. He owned Randy Johnson. I always remember that. And he was one of the only guys in the Mets that owned Randy Johnson.
I actually, over my career, hit Randy Johnson pretty good. I hit over 300 off of him, and I actually hit a home run. I actually took him deep, too.
All right, so you and Joe are the two guys.
Yeah, super obscure, regular-ass players, you know what
I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. were you more comfortable as a left-hand hitter or righty?
Oh, lefty.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, naturally right-handed, but most switch hitters usually are better or feel a little more comfortable from the left side just because, for the sheer number of at-bats that you're seeing against righties as opposed to lefties.
Are you going to manage one day, or do you want to manage?
I think I will. You know, this year coming in, you know, I'm being a bench coach this year, and I'll get to see kind of the lay of the land, how things work.
This is your first year, right?
Yeah, this is my first year. So, I'm going to just kind of feel it out. I know as a bench coach, I don't have much responsibility as far as, you know, doing reports and all that stuff. So it's cool. I can kind of just coach, you know. and do my thing. Like I can, like as a coach, I can move around. I can work with infielders. I can work with hitters. I can go to outfield. You know, if I'm a hitting coach, I just do hitting, or if I'm a whatever. So I get to utilize, you know, my expertise.
Do you have a favorite team that you root for? Like, you played for so many teams. Is there a team that you root for?
Nah. You know, it's kind of like, no, there's no team. Like, I grew up because I was, you know, originally from Georgia and grew up in Florida. I was a Braves fan.
Mm-hmm.
But once I got into pro ball, and I still was a Braves fan. I guess I was happy when they won the World Series in 92 or whatever. But once you start playing and you see how organizations are run, and, you know, you talk to other players, and you just kind of, it's like kind of like the Santa Claus thing, or the Wizard of Oz, the guy behind the curtain kind of situation, where it's like, you thought you liked somebody or some organization, and then you found out this, or then you found out that, or they treat players this way, or this or that. So it's like, nah, I don't have a favorite.
How does Santa Claus play? What do you mean by Santa Claus? Like, his elves don't like him? Like, what do you mean?
What I'm saying is your sense of reality is shattered.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
By thinking, hey, this, you know, I grew up a Braves fan, whatever, whatever. And you kind of fall out of that because you're a professional. It's like, oh, no, I'm going to pull for my team.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, the team that pays me. But then, like I said, when you find out truths, you know, from whether you're playing in that organization or you talk to close friends that are in the organization, you find out, oh, okay, well, dang. No, I don't like that organization, or I do like this organization.
Have you followed the Mets? Like, what do you think they're going to do this year?
You know what? I have not. I haven't really followed baseball, to be honest. And I do know, or from what I've heard, I think they're pretty good. Like, somebody told me that they thought it was going to be like a Subway Series again.
I don't know about that.
So they thought.
I wish.
Yeah, but I don't know. I have no idea. I do know that a couple of guys on the pitching staff have had some arm problems.
Mm-hmm.
So
you don't watch, though? You don't watch other teams?
No,
or you just focus on the job?
No, I just I've been, like, I don't know. I've been doing other things. Like, I just haven't been focused on baseball or sports, really.
Hmm.
I haven't been paying attention too much. Too much sports, but you know, now I will. You know, it's a part of the job.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because some guys, like I talked to Thomas Jones, the former NFL running back, and he does not follow football at all after he retired. So it's interesting. Some guys just don't care about it once they leave, and some guys can't escape it and they want to watch it. So it seems like now you kind of have to be in it because you're working in it. But once you were done 2007, it was like, all right, I don't feel like watching anymore. So.
Yeah, and it's not that I don't appreciate the game. It's like I still, like, if I catch a game, I think what it is I don't watch much TV.
Mm.
That's what it comes down to.
Interesting.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't watch TV. So, if you don't watch TV, you're not going to watch much baseball. But I do have the MLB, you know, at that app. So I will, you know, kind of watch, like last year I watched some highlights. You know, and I'd watch a game here and there. Like, I had a really – like, the best baseball I ever watched last year was the WBC. Like, that was, like, the best – it was awesome. Watching, you know, Puerto Rico and Dominican and then the U.S. winning it. Like, that was, like, really fun baseball. Like, just playing – like, grown men playing like little boys. Like, baseball, how it's supposed to be played. Like, if MLB was like the WBC, I would watch it. Like, I'd watch a game there. I'd, like, have season tickets or something somewhere.
Hmm. Interesting. Some people love the WBC. I'm indifferent on it. I don't think it's great to have before the season. I think there might be a better time for it. But I guess you can't do it after because season's over, guys are tired. It makes sense.
I mean, the timing before, after, it doesn't matter. I was just speaking on the brand of baseball that was being played and the joy and excitement that they played with.
Last one for you, Des, before we let you go. Are you still – I read that you founded Six Hole Records, a hip-hop record label. Is that still going?
No, I did that. That had a run of about 12 years.
Huh.
That I did that. And I actually – I actually founded that 01, the year I was with the Mets.
Really?
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, music is I'm a big fan. I always have been into music. I've, you know, played like three different instruments. Now I, you know, mess around on my turntables and my, you know, my beat machines and whatnot.
So you used to produce, make beats, and you got some bars or no?
Nah, man, I I play around. I don't, you know, I don't consider myself a rapper.
Like I was going to say, give me a hot beats. 16 right now.
Nah, I don't sit like that. Like, no, that's not my thing. I was, you know, I ran the label, you know, I wore a lot of different hats, but except for that of artist, you know, when I do it, it's just, it's hobby. But no, big fan of music, of hip hop. And, you know, I wanted to do something else about it. Like just listening wasn't enough. Hmm. And I had a friend of mine who was really dope, you know, a producer, rapper, DJ, you know, triple threat guy, and real dope. So he's kind of what inspired me to start my label. And, you know, I ended up putting out some decent music. One of the biggest artist that I have is a guy by the name of Ninth Wonder. He's a producer. And, I mean, he's made beats for some of the, you know, some of the biggest in the game, Jay-Z, Destiny's Child. He won a Grammy with Mary J. Blige. And, you know, he's done, you know, produced for me. I put out his first album. And, you know, he's like nowadays, he's, you know, he's pretty big, doing big things, teaching, you know, hip-hop courses at colleges. And, you know, he's got his own record label. And actually, his artist, the first artist that he signed to his label, was up for a Grammy this year for Hip Hop Album of the Year. She's a female MC by the name of Rhapsody. And so, yeah, like the lineage, you know, six-hole lineage, you know what I'm saying, is still riding.
Hmm. Yeah, that's intriguing. I didn't know any of that. Desi Relaford, he is the bench coach for the High A Daytona Tortugas with the Cincinnati Reds and spent a decade in the big leagues as a utility player and a always memorable season with the Mets. Desi, it was good taking a trip down memory lane with you. Good talking to you, and we'll talk again soon. Appreciate it. Good luck this season.
Thanks a lot, Jake. Appreciate you having me, man.
All right, man. Take care.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.